Well, let's put it bluntly. Does the Catholic Church have a problem with homosexual clergy? We'll cover that and talk more about pro-life stories that'll change your heart and your mind.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, if you missed yesterday's radio broadcast, it was really a happening event. We were flooded with calls. All phone lines lit up when we asked for folks to call in, friends to call in who had had abortions in their past, either a mother that aborted her baby or a father that paid for, participated, and encouraged the abortion. I didn't know how many folks would call in because these are such sensitive, difficult issues. But after my 30-minute interview with Justin Reeder of Love Life going on all over North Carolina this Saturday, major events, as we were finished talking and talking about the powerful pro-life movement and making a redemptive difference in so many lives, I said in the second half hour of the show, if you want to call, if you've had an abortion, if you want to raise your voice to warn others, please do. And the phone lines lit up. The phone lines were jammed just about to the end of the broadcast. And I had a fight back, breaking down, crying, listening to some of the callers as they sobbed and wept on the broadcast. Friends, this is a message of life. This is a message of hope. This is a message of redemption. And we want to give you an opportunity. All of you who tried to call yesterday and were not able to get on the show, or who are unable to get through, give us a call today, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884 is the number to call. And you can call in anonymously. We had folks we didn't get to that wanted to share about a daughter having an abortion or others in their own personal experience. But the voices we heard yesterday, poignant, powerful, moving, stirring. I finished the show and said to myself, this is why we do live talk radio. And all of you that listened, all of you that watched yesterday, I'm sure you were impacted along with me and along with so many others. I literally believe lives were saved yesterday. I truly, genuinely, honestly believe that there were people that were listening, that God had listened. Who knows? Maybe we'll get a call in a few weeks from someone who was on the way to an abortion clinic, accidentally flipped on the radio to our network, heard us talking, and ended up turning around. Perhaps we'll hear from that very person in the weeks ahead. Again, 866-348-7884. But first, we want to talk about another issue. In a sense, it's totally unrelated. In a sense, it's related. And this has to do with the problem of homosexuality in Catholic clergy. Now, let me say this to all of you who are Catholic and who are very discouraged by the state of the church. You may not like the direction Pope Francis is going. You may be grieved over all the sexual abuse scandals and feel they're not being dealt with properly. May I encourage you that Jesus didn't fail you, even if Catholic leaders did, even if you feel the church did as a whole? This is not the church of Jesus. The church of Jesus is neither Catholic nor Protestant. It is all those who know him and are in him and who have been forgiven and are his people. So Jesus didn't fail you. You can find Jesus outside of some of the traditions you've been raised in, and you'll find him to be faithful and true. Again, he doesn't ever fail us. All right, so what about the sex abuse scandals in the Catholic Church? They are normally written off as this has nothing to do with homosexuality. This is just a matter of pedophilia, and there's no connection. And a pedophile can abuse either way, either direction, and that it has nothing to do with the sexual orientation or desire. That's just a perverse thing. We all agree it's perverse, it's ugly, it's horrific. And for those of you who are victims of child abuse, only you can understand the depth of scarring and pain that you've been through and suffered because of those things. And here too, God can restore and God can heal and God can help bring life and recovery and wholeness and strength. But we don't minimize the evil. We don't minimize the damage. We don't minimize the ugliness or the sin. But the fact is, the great majority of abuse is found not in, say, a Catholic priest abusing a three-year-old, but rather a Catholic priest abusing a 14-year-old. And it is overwhelmingly male-on-male, therefore a homosexual problem. I wrote an article that we posted on our website a few months back asking the question, does the Catholic Church have a homosexual problem? And I quoted in the article Cardinal Raymond Burke, who said this: "It was clear after the studies following the 2002 sexual abuse crisis that most of the acts of abuse were in fact homosexual acts committed with adolescent young men. There was a studied attempt to either overlook or to deny this. Now it seems clear in light of these recent terrible scandals that indeed there is a homosexual culture, not only among the clergy, but even within the hierarchy, which needs to be purified at the root. It is, of course, a tendency that is disordered." All right, now, why am I bringing all this up now? Because there is an edict from the Vatican to bishops in America, Catholic bishops in America, to hold off on some of the disciplinary measures and other measures that they were going to put forth to deal with this crisis in the Catholic Church in America. And that's caused further dissent. So in light of this news, I want to address this afresh. And friends, my goal is just to tell the truth. My goal is just to lay out the facts. I'm not Catholic. I'm not saying this as an insider, nor am I saying this as a Catholic basher. If you listen to the show, you know that that is not my MO and that I do not devote shows to critiquing Catholicism. Yes, I have deep and profound differences with aspects of Catholicism, but my reason being on the radio and writing is not primarily to be a foe of the Catholic Church. And we have Catholic listeners that enjoy the broadcast and Catholic supporters that appreciate our ministry. All right. So I didn't write a book exposing sin in the Catholic Church. I wrote a book exposing sin in the Charismatic Church. In other words, as an insider, I wrote Playing with Holy Fire to address problems in the Charismatic Pentecostal Church, which include sexual immorality. But there is a specific issue having to do with homosexual clergy. There's an article up on the stream, and it has this title: The Rocky Horror Bishops Show. Many bishops don't understand the roots of sex abuse. So the article, written by Catholic author John Gravino, goes on to say this, and it's quite striking. He says, "What was a key driver of clergy sexual abuse? A depraved seminary culture which corrupted future priests, forming in them a hedonistic, largely homosexual environment." Sullins writes, "Without the influence of the homosexual subcultures, a concentration of homosexual men in the priesthood would not have led to as large an increase in minor sex abuse as proved to be the case." The report agrees with the conclusion of the 2011 John Jay report that homosexual activity during seminary was significantly related to the increased likelihood of a male child victim. Sullins documents a clear pattern going back to the early 50s. So you're talking 70 years now. It shows that the incidence of sexual abuse tracked almost perfectly with one trend. That is, the increasing presence of homosexual subcultures in seminaries, both peaking in the 80s. If you want a vivid depiction of these subcultures, I recommend reading Michael Rose's Goodbye, Good Men book. I haven't read that book. Well, in this article, there is a link to the report. And I want to get to this report in a moment and just lay out the truth so that we understand what we're dealing with here. Now, in my view, one of the big problems here is required celibacy. Why? Because celibacy is not a gift that every Christian leader is going to have. Let's just say that every Catholic priest in the world was born again, saved, knew the Lord, forgiven individual. Okay? Obviously, that's not the case, but let's just say theoretically that was the case. Since those are the only ones who are allowed to serve in that level of leadership, those who are celibate, it's saying to all the others who do not have the gift of celibacy, who have not been graced like Paul was, say, in the New Testament. So they're like Peter or the other apostles that had wives and even traveled with their wives. So if that gift is not given to everyone, then you cannot require it of everyone without asking for massive problems, be they heterosexual or homosexual. So just like you've got scandals in Protestant church and evangelical church, charismatic church, you've got scandals with married men having affairs with women they're not married to, or having homosexual affairs with men, or wives having affairs with others. These things happen. They're going to happen all the more when celibacy is required. They're going to happen on a far more extreme level in a case like this. And does it take a rocket scientist to explain this? That if people who desire to be married or who were not gifted by God to be celibate, if these people now are required, if you're going to serve God, you have to be single, then you're going to have all kinds of rampant stuff going on behind the scenes. Now, let's up the ante. Let's now say that many men will say, if they're same-sex attracted, but they want to serve in the priesthood, well, since I can't marry anyway, at least in the eyes of the Catholic Church, right? I mean, society's made some ridiculous, crazy changes there, but say, okay, since I can't marry anyway, and I feel called, I might as well go into priesthood. So now you've got all these men who are same-sex attracted, living together in different settings, seminary, serving by themselves without a spouse, right? Without a wife, friends with other priests, same-sex attracted, celibate. You're asking for trouble here to have that kind of environment, especially in a serenade. Now, add to it, and this is where the thing becomes a toxic mix that just explodes. Add to it this, namely, that the seminaries had a culture which actually encouraged this or looked the other way. Now you have the scandal that we're living with for decades. We'll be right back with some data from this report.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. So let's hear what a Catholic leader has to say. He's been talking about building bridges with the Catholic Church and LGBT community and about being gay Catholics, etc., and conservative Catholic leaders are really speaking out against this Catholic priest, James Martin. So he was asked this question. An interviewer is asking him this question on behalf of different people sending in their inquiries. Francisco is asking, how can one respond to persons citing Leviticus and Corinthian texts condemning homosexuality? So Leviticus 18:22, it's detestable. If a man lies with a man, the man lies with a woman. Leviticus 20:13, that same thing has the death penalty associated with it. 1 Corinthians 6:9, Paul says those who practice homosexuality will not inherit the kingdom of heaven. So how does James Martin, Catholic priest James Martin, reply? This is what he said.
Yeah, so all these Bible passages that people throw at you, I think really need to be understood in their historical context, right? I mean, Leviticus and Deuteronomy, and even the stuff from the New Testament where Paul talks about it, you know, once or twice, has to be understood in the historical context, right? The Bible is written in a particular time. It's the inspired word of God, but it is written certainly by in a particular time and in a particular historical context, certainly in Old Testament times, they didn't understand the phenomenon of homosexuality and bisexuality, I would say, as we do today. I also like to say that there's a lot of other stuff in Leviticus that we, sort of understand in its historical context, like what kind of slaves can we have, you know, that kind of stuff, whether or not we can wear certain kinds of clothes, whether or not our crops can be next to one another. I mean, we don't look at those passages in an ahistorical way, so why should we look at passages on homosexuality in that way? And I'd also like to say that in his long ministry, his three-year public ministry, Jesus says nothing about the topic. So when people use those arguments at you, I think it's an important one needs to remind them that those things need to be understood in their context as we understand everything in the Gospels.
So when you've got corrupt teaching like that from a Catholic leader, adding into the forced celibacy problem, which is not biblical, it is unbiblical to require leaders to be celibate, all right? So when you've got that mix there, you've got people like that with their voices, and then you have men, according to all these reports, cardinals and others who are actively involved in abusive homosexual relations. I say abusive because they were the leaders, and it was people under them, etc., that were involved. But even if it was consensual, it was still equally sinful and ugly. So when you have all this going on, it's no surprise that you have these scandals, that you've got a real massive problem. You say, is it everybody? No, it's not everybody. Is it most? No, it's not most, but it's a significant minority, a very significant minority, and this is really problematic. And to make it just a pedophilia problem, that's not the issue. It is a homosexual problem within the Catholic Church. You say, well, what about the points that James Martin made? I mean, aren't those really issues? And yeah, I mean, we don't follow everything in Leviticus today, and Paul was writing as a man of his times. Okay. Of course, we've dealt with these over and over. Or consider this video, Can You Be Gay and Christian, addresses these very issues in just 6 minutes. My book, Can You Be Gay and Christian, addresses them in great depth, going through the relevant literature while giving you a heart of compassion for those who struggle with unwanted same-sex attraction. But without a doubt, there are simple answers to these things. For example, the laws in Leviticus about dietary things, you can't eat this fruit, that fruit, so Leviticus 11 and then parallel in Deuteronomy 14, those were not given for all peoples. Those were given specifically for the people of Israel. Just like mixing your field with different kinds of seeds or wearing mixed garments. That was not given for everyone. Those were not universal moral prohibitions. Those were specifically for Israel to keep them separate from the nations and to teach them certain things about purity and distinctiveness. However, the laws in Leviticus 18, which are primarily focused on incest, those were for all people. At the end of the chapter, God says he judged the Canaanites for these sins. Not only so, but the prohibitions are repeated in the New Testament. So they're found in the Old Testament as universal moral prohibitions, not just for Israel, but for all people. All right. If it's an abomination for the Canaanites, it's an abomination for the church today. All right. That's self-evident. And then these things are repeated and reemphasized in the New Testament. And according to Paul in Romans 1, that the issue is this is contrary to God's created order. That doesn't change by culture. That doesn't change by one generation to the next. This is absolutely something that is for all people for all time, when it is contrary to God's created order and therefore wrong. The idea that Jesus said nothing about this, well, what did Jesus say about bestiality? What did Jesus say about beating your wife? What did Jesus say about a bunch of other things that we all agree are issues that are repulsive, wrong, ugly? Well, certain things he didn't address because he didn't need to, because they had already been definitively addressed in the Hebrew scriptures. And he was a Jewish rabbi who did not come to abolish, but to fulfill. But even in saying that, he did, of course, address these issues, as we've pointed out many times. Number one, by saying he didn't come to abolish the law, but to fulfill, he took the moral requirements of the law to a higher level. And that includes standards of sexual purity. Adultery is not just the act, but also in the heart. All right? So the prohibitions against incest, they don't go away. By the way, if Leviticus 18 doesn't apply today, what's the scriptural prohibition of incest? Anybody? Anyone? gay Christian advocate, liberal, progressive Christian? Please, would you answer that? What's the biblical prohibition against incest if Leviticus 18 doesn't apply today? Please tell me. How much time did Jesus talk about that? So it's therefore okay because he didn't? Seriously? Really? Okay, that's part one. Part two, Matthew 15, verse 19, Jesus said that it's what comes out of the heart that defiles us, not what goes into the mouth. So in other words, whether you wash your hands before eating or eat certain food, that doesn't defile your spirit, all right? It goes in your mouth and passes out of your body. But what comes out of your heart, that's what defiles. What comes out of the heart is what? Things like sexual immorality. And in Greek, it is the word porneia in the plural, which means all sexual acts outside of marriage. All right? Then, Matthew 19, 4 through 6, Jesus answers a question about divorce and explains that God's intent for marriage from the beginning is one man joined to one woman for life. So he lays out the meaning of marriage. He says all sexual acts committed outside of marriage defile us, and he takes the moral standard to the Torah to a higher level. So you better believe, in the clearest needed terms, he addresses the question of homosexuality, which again, he did not need to address whatsoever, because Jewish teaching of that day was even stronger than the teaching that was found in the Torah. And it was nothing you needed. It's like asking him, do we need to believe in God? We weren't really clear on that, where you stood. Do we need to believe the Bible is inspired? We weren't really clear on where you stood on the scriptures. What's it called? The Bible at that time, but the scriptures. No, these are self-evident things. All that to say, the crisis is definitely here. And in the Catholic Church, it is, to repeat, a homosexual crisis. It's not primarily a pedophile crisis. It is more specifically a homosexual crisis. And there is hope and redemption and salvation for everyone who turns to the Lord and asks for forgiveness. That's 100% true, no matter who you are, no matter what you've done, no matter where you're coming from. But let me read to you from this report issued D. Paul Sullins of the Catholic University of America and Ruth Institute. Is Catholic clergy sex abuse related to homosexual priests? And the executive summary, so we scroll down one page. This report compares previously unexamined measures of the share of homosexual Catholic priests and the incidence and victim gender of minor sex abuse by Catholic priests from 1950 to 2001 to see if these matters are related. New data from the 2018 Pennsylvania Grand Jury report are also examined. We come back, I want to get into some of the key points about this study. And I want to make a personal appeal to all of you listening. I just saw on Drudge Report a headline that this last year, what was it, 787,000 or 878,000, one of those, more Americans became millionaires. Almost a million new millionaires in America this year. And hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars have been spent on political campaigns that just ended with these elections that leave us deeply divided here in America. May I propose to you that there is money to be had for the gospel, and that it's in our pockets and it's in our bank accounts, and that some of you have the ability to help us as we come to the end of the year with the year-end tax-deductible gift. And if you value what we do, we work hard at it. We have a dedicated team. Many work sacrificially and put in all kinds of extra hours for the Lord. Can I appeal to you to stand with us? We are under financial pressure. It is challenging just to meet needs on a day-to-day basis. Your help would really, really go a long way. And the best way is if you think that our service to you on radio, on internet, by article, in other ways, that you think it's worth a dollar a day or more, become a torchbearer. Become a monthly supporter. Go to Ask Dr. Brown right now, askdrbrown.org. Click on donate. Become a monthly supporter today. Join our support team. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome, friends, to today's broadcast, 866-348-7884. That is the number to call. If you were one of our callers yesterday trying to get through to share your own story relative to abortion, we were only able to get to a few of the calls, moving calls, powerful calls, life-giving calls. If you tried to get through or you're on hold and we never got to, phone lines are open, 866-348-7884. And if you have a general Bible question you've been wanting to ask me or something that ties in with pro-life or as we are looking now, the issue of homosexuality in the Bible in light of the current crisis within the Catholic Church, phone lines are open for you as well with your questions, 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, something that is undeniable. I have watched this for many, many years now. When you see a denomination, say a Presbyterian denomination or a Lutheran denomination, when you see one of these denominations shift and become increasingly liberal, sometimes it'll break off and the conservative group will stay or come up with a new name and the liberal group will go on with the old name. But the group that becomes liberal, swings liberal, invariably, you will see the swing on three major issues. It's going to happen sooner or later. Number one, you're going to see that they become pro-abortion. This becomes their stand. This becomes the good thing. This becomes the positive thing. This becomes the virtuous thing. That's number one. Number two, they're going to change their views on homosexuality. Jesus didn't address this. The Bible was speaking of the times, even more radically. Well, the Bible sanctions love of any kind as long as it's consensual, whatever. You're going to find a shift there to the point of blessing same-sex relationships and even ordaining same-sex clergy. Then same-sex attracted clergy. Those in active relationships, I should say. All right. So you're going to see the shift on abortion. You're going to see the shift on homosexuality. And you're going to see the shift on Israel. You're going to see a shift that is so pronounced that ultimately, it will become so strongly Palestinian that it will join like the BDS movement, boycott, divestment, sanctions, that it will turn strongly against Israel. You'll see that happen. I've watched it time and time again. Now, I know individual believers that are strongly pro-life and that are strong on sexual issues and homosexuality, but have compromised, in my view, on Israel. I know of individuals like that. But generally speaking, when you see the shift in one, you see the shift in the other. You say, why is that? Well, I mean, you could just say, hey, there are two sides. There's light and darkness. There's Satan's side and God's side. And once you get on the wrong side, you're on the wrong side. Or you could say that could be true, but could it also be when you get away from the literal meaning of Scripture, when you get away from the full authority of Scripture, when you can now change the meaning of major passages and major truths, when you can do that, could it now be that you're going to shift on these issues? And I say to a great extent, yes, 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 for sure. That is what happens. So you see Catholic Church weak on these three issues. It's no surprise. As it goes from more conservative to more liberal theologians and leaders, it's only natural that we'll shift in these directions. Yesterday, friends, if you were listening to The Line of Fire, if you watched the show, you were probably as moved as I was by callers who were not shouting their abortions. They were weeping their abortions. They were in pain, some of them over things that happened 40 years ago, 30 years ago. And one of the takeaways for me, wasn't new, but it was a reminder, was the church needs to do a much better job of removing the stigma of pregnancy outside of wedlock to the point that someone, yes, ashamed, yes, grieved over what they did, knows they can come forward and receive healing and receive life and receive love as opposed to condemnation. In other words, some knew, there's no way I can come forward. My mother will be too upset. My church will be too upset. Those around me, they'll just be too upset. So the only solution is don't let anybody know I'm pregnant. Have an abortion. So yes, the mother was responsible, but others created an environment in which that young mother or older mother thought she had no choice. One woman, married with two children, said her husband was legalistic or self-righteous. She got raped while on a business trip, thought there's no way I can tell my husband, so gonna have an abortion. And that led to real problems in her life for many years thereafter. Well, yeah, it's going to be traumatic for a husband to find out that a wife was raped, but that's not the wife's fault. And maybe a 16-year-old girl in a church, you know, she and her boyfriend go further than intended, and next thing she finds out she's pregnant. It's like, there's no way. Everyone will hate me. I'm going to be stigmatized for life. There's no way I can have a baby, even if I want to give it up for adoption. There's no way. Well, what we have to have is an environment, yeah, where we take holiness seriously, and we take righteousness seriously, and we absolutely stand for sexual purity. But when someone falls short, we offer them a hand of love and restoration and mercy and compassion and say, hey, we're with you now. You've got friends here. You've got family. We're going to support you. Let's go ahead and have that baby. And if you're not capable of being a mother right now, then let's look into adoption and other things. And this has all been an agonizing experience and either mistakes made, or if you're a victim, that the pain is all the more intense. But hey, let's work together as a community of life. Let's do that. 866-34-TRUTH. I want to come back in a moment as we talk about abortion, homosexuality, and anti-Israel stands, how you often see these shifts. I want to share some really shocking statistics with you from a recent Catholic report done by a Catholic professor. But first, let's go to the phones. We go to Sheila in Texas. Sheila, thanks so much for calling the Line of Fire today.
Hi, thank you.
Are you speaking right into the phone? It's very hard for me to hear you.
Yes, I was. Oh,
there we go. There we go.
Yeah,
all right, there we go. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So I was calling. I just missed the show yesterday, and I was wanting to talk with you about you know, the abortions that I've had in the past. Unfortunately, it's been more than one, and I'm just having a hard time forgiving myself. I know that. I don't even know if God has forgiven me, but I just feel really guilty, and it's caused a lot of emotional stress.
Hmm. Sheila, how long ago did you have these abortions?
Well, the first one I had, I was a teenager. My mom actually forced me to get one. Hmm.
And Sheila, what was her reason for forcing you to get one? It was going to bring shame on the family? Was that it or something else?
Well, I mean, I really don't know. I mean, I was only in high school. I was 16 going on 17 years old.
Yeah.
So I really don't know her reason for allowing, you know, having me do something like that and making me believe that it was okay. Because later on, you know, in my 20s, I, you know, had several other abortions.
Mm. And Sheila, I'm asking these questions with the goal of helping others to hear and learn, and then with the goal of really giving you assurance about being forgiven. So when you had the abortion in high school, how did that affect you back then? Were you conscious of an effect, or did you only learn about it later?
No, I learned more about it later, but I knew I was going through depression from it. Mm. I'd wake up having nightmares, and it really affected. I knew that it was not right, but I really didn't know the extent as far as what it says, you know, what God says about it. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, and then in your 20s, now it was your choice. Was it just you didn't feel like you wanted children or you weren't ready to have them? What moved you to make those decisions then?
I was single. I wasn't married. And I didn't think, you know, that I would have the father in my life. And I thought it would be so hard on me being, you know, still young and trying to find my way. And
yeah, and, you know, Sheila, I ask these questions because a lot of folks, maybe men or couples who've been happily married for years and they can't relate to this, that it's not just some flippant decision that you were thinking through lots of difficult issues. You made the wrong decisions, but it wasn't just a flippant thing and, you know, just like simple birth control method. It was wrestling with these issues, being single and so on. And I often say many women agonize over the decision and then have the emotional pain afterwards. So you mentioned the nightmares you had as a teenager. What effect do you feel that these abortions have had on you emotionally over the years?
It's taken an emotional toll because I think back that, I mean, I have three children now.
Yeah.
But I think back that I could have really had this wonderful family, whether it was, you know, girls, whether or not it was a girl or a boy. I just feel like I'm missing out on something, you know. I mean, I had children that I got rid of, so I feel like I'm missing out. And of course, they missed out, and it's just sometimes unbearable to think about that I could have more kids on this earth than I do.
Yeah,
that I, you know, that I aborted.
Yeah, absolutely, Sheila. Do you believe that Jesus died for those sins that you committed?
And I know he did, but in my mind, I'm thinking that I know he did die for my sin, and I know there's not like the ultimate sin. I mean, maybe there is, but I just felt like I killed, and I feel like he just, I don't know, can't
forgive
me. Or...
Yeah, I want to encourage you to recognize that one of the greatest men who ever lived was Paul, the apostle. He wrote basically half of the New Testament. One of the closest men to God's heart who ever lived. He was involved in killing followers of Jesus, adults. He was involved in doing that, and God forgave him. And he said he acted in ignorance and unbelief. What you did was wrong and ugly, but Jesus died for that, just like every other sin, just like that. So put your full trust in what he did, Sheila. He doesn't want you to be guilt-ridden. He wants you to know that you're forgiven and that there's new life in his son. And your words will save lives today.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, once more to everyone listening, if you struggle with the guilt of abortion, there is forgiveness in Jesus. No, I can't relate to it personally. I'm not a mother. There are things I'll never be able to relate to as a man. But for sure, there are things that all of us have done that are grievous and ugly. You say, well, not like that. I understand. I'm not in any way seeking to make light of the gravity of the sin of abortion. But I'm saying that sin is ugly in God's sight. Sin is uglier than we could ever imagine. And yet Jesus died for sin, all sin. If we turn to him in repentance, if we say, God, forgive me, wash me clean, he will forgive that sin. And rather than you having guilt, you might just have this sense of loss, and with it a sense of purpose to bring life to others. But that's going to be different from that nagging guilt that makes you think that God's holding this against you. He doesn't hold it against you. If you've truly been forgiven in Jesus, he's not holding it over your head. So don't hold it over your own head. Sense of loss could always be there. A sense of what if could always be there. A sense of regret, but not a sense of guilt that alienates you from the Lord. Let me grab one more call, then I want to share some very important information with you. We go to Tennessee. Debbie, welcome to the Line of Fire. Thanks so much for calling.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here. I just wanted to call to let you know about a ministry that I am involved in. I myself have had 3 abortions, and so I know from the last caller what it's like to have a wounded heart. And the ministry that I am involved in is called deeperstill.org, and it's located and founded out of Tennessee. And the main chapter is in Knoxville, and my chapter is in Cookeville that I am involved in. And what we do is have men and women come for our weekend retreat where we just shower them with the love of God and explain, and they go through different processes of learning who God is and his forgiveness and his mercy and his grace. And they come so wounded on Friday, and they become a new creature on Sunday morning. And the restoration that God performs, it blesses our hearts to be able to serve.
Incredible.
Because God takes over and does miraculous works within each man and woman that comes.
Amazing.
And so I just wanted to put that out there for men and women who are struggling with this woundedness that Satan has told them that there is no hope, and he gives them lies and deceit. Well, Jesus has the answer for them. And we're just there to minister and show them God's love, because God loves them and he's not forgotten them.
Amen. And once again, what's the website?
It's deeperstill.org.
Okay, deeperstill.org. All right, I'm just looking at this now. Deeper Still is a group of Christ followers wishing to have a line-by-line, verse-by-verse study of the Bible. That's you folks?
Yes.
Okay, Rivendell Christian Communities. Okay, got it. So very quickly, because this is a big question, but if I could get a short answer. If there's one key thing that you've seen that helps the light go on for people to receive forgiveness, what's the one key thing that happens? Obviously, the Holy Spirit ministers supernaturally and applies the grace and love of God to a heart. Is there something where the light goes on that you've seen happen frequently?
Well, I can speak for myself is how I saw God, my Father, and how I could not forgive myself. Because I was looking at him with an earthly look and not a heavenly look. So I was looking at him with the wrong perspective of who God is. And that opened my eyes so that I could see, he can forgive me because he's not judging me like the world judges me.
Got it. So perhaps we look at God through the lens of an earthly father that was not a loving father,
he was a loving father, but, in this world, we sometimes judge each other with how we want each other to perform.
Yeah, understood.
And that's understood. Not how God is.
Understood. So however our view of God gets twisted. Hey, Debbie, thank you for calling and sharing that. Yeah, much appreciated. Yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off there. My apologies. But thank you also for being an example of, the forgiveness can come. The heart, the wounded heart can be healed. Thank you, Debbie. I just thought strikes me with the Shout Your Abortion movement, just put together a compilation called Weep Your Abortion as people write in and tell their stories and just put it out as an ebook or something like that. Hey, if you got a story, we start getting them in, just go to our website, askdrbrown.org, click on contact. If you want to share your story, make it half page or 5 pages with lessons for others. We get enough of them. Maybe we'll put them out as a compilation. All right, back to the current crisis in the Catholic Church. The new report that has been issued by D. Paul Sullins of the Catholic University of America and the Ruth Institute, asking the question, is Catholic clergy sex abuse related to homosexual priests? I want to read again the executive summary and then some shocking stats here. So it states this report compares previously unexamined measures of the share of homosexual Catholic priests and the incidence and victim gender of minor sex abuse by Catholic priests from 1950 to 2001 to see if these matters are related. New data from the 2018 Pennsylvania Grand Jury report are also examined. Key points. Are you ready? Number one, clergy sex abuse is still a problem. Since peaking 35 years ago, it has declined much less than commonly thought. The decline is consistent with an overall drop in sexual assault in American society. Number two, since 2002, abuse has been rising amid signs of complacency by church leaders, and today is comparable to the early 1970s. Bad news, a lot of lives getting destroyed, friends. Number three, the share of homosexual men in the priesthood rose from twice that of the general population in the 1950s to eight times the general population in the 1980s. This trend was strongly correlated with increasing child sex abuse. What do you expect? It's a recipe for disaster. Number four, a quarter of priests ordained in the late 1960s report the existence of a homosexual subculture in their seminary, rising to over half of priests ordained in the 1980s who report the existence of homosexual subculture in their seminary. This trend is also strongly correlated with increasing child sex abuse. Again, how could it not be? Number five, four out of five victims over age seven were boys. Only one in five were girls. Ease of access to boys relative to girls accounts for about one-fifth of this disparity. The number of homosexual priests accounts for the remaining four-fifths. In other words, the reason it's so many more boys being abused than girls is because of a disproportionate number of homosexual priests. Number six, estimates from these findings predict that had the proportion of homosexual priests remained at the 1950s level, at least 12,000 fewer children, mostly boys, would have suffered abuse. 12,000 fewer children, mostly boys, would have suffered abuse. Friends, these are devastating statistics. This is in harmony with earlier reports. And be it Catholic leaders or the mainstream media, which can't acknowledge the reality here, it keeps getting turned into a pedophilia problem where it's not primarily that. It is primarily a homosexual problem. Now, for those hearing me, don't read something into my words I'm not saying. This is not to say that homosexual men are more evil than heterosexual men, that if all the Catholic clergy was heterosexual men, that there would be no problem. No, you, because they're forced to be celibate, you just have all kinds of other sexual scandals, all right? But the ongoing abuse of minors is no question directly tied to this homosexual subculture in the seminaries for a weakened theology that accepted some of these things, for corrupt leadership that looked the other way. That's true. Now, it's mainly Catholic leaders, Catholic conservatives, who are raising their voices, who are speaking out. Like my colleague John Zmirak at The Stream has been a constant loud voice, a prophetic voice to the Catholic Church about these issues. I don't address them all that much, one major reason being that I'm not Catholic. But as this is in the news again this week, because of the Vatican telling American bishops, slow down in terms of exercising certain new things, bringing them in, some new disciplinary procedures, etc. Slow down on these new measures. Stop right now. It's back in the news. This report just came into the news. It's really important that we get the truth out about this. May I speak totally straight and clear to you? If you appreciate what we're doing, we need your help. If we're a blessing to you on radio, online, to keep doing what we're doing, your help is essential. This is not a one-man show. We do this as a team. I can only do so much. You can help, and we need your help today. Would you become a monthly supporter, a torchbearer? $1 a day or more per month, we pour back into you with many, many benefits every single month. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on Donate. Monthly support. You'll find out how we'll sow back into you as you sow into us. God bless. Back with you tomorrow.